From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The CDC's HIV surveillance report ranks the Fort Myers-Cape Coral area 16th in the nation in 2013 when it comes to the number of new cases of HIV. We're taking a closer look at living with HIV, treatment options, and targeted public education efforts aimed at addressing HIV in Southwest Florida. Plus, the campaign to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour has been gaining traction around the country recently. The bill proposing a $15 minimum wage in Florida was one of the first measures filed for the state's 2016 legislative session. We'll hear from supporters and opponents as we explore the pros and cons of raising the minimum wage. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Proposals to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour have been gaining traction in recent months in New York, California, and elsewhere in the country. Here in Florida, the Service Employees International Union held a series of rallies in cities across the state advocating for a $15 an hour minimum wage. A bill to do just that has already been filed for Florida's 2016 legislative session. We'll hear from supporters and opponents as we weigh the pros and cons of increasing the minimum wage later in today's show. But first, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's HIV surveillance report ranks the Cape Coral-Fort Myers metropolitan area 16th in the nation in 2013 when it comes to the number of new cases of HIV. Miami came in at number one. Nationwide, more than 1.2 million people are living with HIV, and an estimated nearly 13% of those don't know they have it. In 2013, Florida led the nation in the number of new HIV infections with nearly 5,400 newly identified cases. According to statistics from the State Department of Health acquired by the news press, infection rates in Lee County are somewhat higher than surrounding areas. Lee County's rate of HIV cases between 2012 and 2014 stood at 19.2 per 100,000 residents. That compares to 13.5 cases in Collier County and an 11.0 rate for Charlotte County. According to the CDC, the annual estimated number and rate of diagnoses of HIV infections in the U.S. remained stable between 2009 and 2013. So what's behind the local increase in new HIV infections? Joining me now for a closer look at the current status of HIV in Southwest Florida and to explore treatment options and public education outreach efforts is David Jackson. He's an outreach and prevention specialist with the McGregor Clinic here in Fort Myers. David, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me.
We're also speaking with Patty Kelly with AHF ICANN. She's Assistant Supervisor of Case Management, and that's the AIDS Healthcare Foundation and Island Coast AIDS Network, also here in Fort Myers. Thanks for your time today, Patty.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Connect with our guests with your phone calls to 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post your comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Patty Kelly, I wanted to start with you. First of all, tell us generally about AHF ICANN and the scope of services available. I understand it goes well beyond testing and medical treatment. You've got a food pantry there, case management services.
We have been around for many years in the area. We do provide medical. We also have pharmacy services. As you know, we do the testing, case management. We do have a food pantry for our clients. We also have a support group that we run. We also have mental health services. And we provide services regardless of the ability to pay.
All right. And how would you characterize your role? When we spoke the other day, I learned that one of your jobs is really kind of delivering information on test results to clients. I imagine that's maybe a particularly difficult part of your work.
Generally, what I do is once the person has had their test and they've tested positive, I'm one of the people that will go in and help them get set up with services, case management, and also explain to them all the medical services that are available in the community. I think that first thing to do is make sure that the person is calm. A lot of people, when they first get tested, they're kind of shocked.
Mm.
And you don't want them leaving with not knowing what the next step is. And the next step would be to get into medical care. That's the primary thing for us, is to make sure that they are going into medical care somewhere in this community. And that's my goal.
All right.
Make sure that they are set up.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you tell them next after you give them, you know, a positive test result? But I guess that makes sense that, you know, just making sure they know those services are available.
Right. And, you know, we help them, guide them through decisions after that. You know, a lot of times people want to know where they're going to get their meds. If they have no insurance, what's out there? Can I get meds? And that's what we do as case managers. And we reassure them that, yes, if you need medications, they're available. And we have different programs that people can access.
And David Jackson, tell us a bit about the McGregor Clinic and the scope of services provided there.
Thank you. The McGregor Clinic, we were founded on November 15th, 1999, by our executive director, Ms. Sharon Murphy. She's very passionate about the area of HIV and AIDS here in Southwest Florida, particularly. With ICANN, we do offer HIV primary care, case management, confidential testing, as well as counseling, and we also offer our support group known as the Positive Living Room. To offer a more holistic approach to our clients and the community that we serve, McGregor Clinic also provides a clothing center where our clients can come in and pick up clothing items if they need them, and we also have a small food bank where we're able to help them with their health and food needs as well.
And tell us specifically about your role. Are you primarily out in the community, or do you kind of split your time between the clinic and doing outreach?
Okay. Serving as the community representative for McGregor Clinic, we are both out in the community as well as in the clinic. The majority of my time is spent out in the community educating about what HIV is and how it is impacting Southwest Florida particularly. With that effort, we have gained relationships with Edison College. I believe they have a new name now, FSW.
Mm-hmm.
We are also partnered with FGCU and one of our newest relationships out in the community with the Housing Authority of the City of Fort Myers. And we're able to go out into their properties and offer free rapid testing as well as educational components to help them understand what HIV is and the purpose and the reasons why people need to be tested for HIV.
And David, I'm sure you're happy to answer any questions that folks have out in the community, but are you ever surprised by some of the questions that you get?
There are moments where we are surprised by the questions, and most of the questions come due to a lack of knowledge, the education component missing. So that's the reason we get some questions that may be surprising to those of us that work in the field, but not so much for the person that's asking.
And Patty, do you think that, you know, maybe kind of a general lack of knowledge, at least for maybe some groups, is perhaps why our local HIV infection rates are where they are?
Yes, I do think so. I think a lot of it is the younger people, especially the kids that are coming out of schools. There's no education in our school systems other than abstinence education. So they're not learning anything from the school system, and a lot of parents aren't always comfortable with teaching their children about HIV or even about STDs. So we still have that lack of education, and so they're growing up and then going into colleges and not really having a really good firm knowledge of what general STDs are.
Right, and to compliment on what Patty just stated, it is a major, major downfall as it relates to the schools in Lee County to not provide sexual health education to the children. For some parents, it is a difficult conversation to have with your 11 or 12-year-old, and even for some who have teenagers, it's still a difficult conversation. But to allow the school systems to offer classes or some type of curriculum regarding sexual health, that way they would have a better understanding of what they're getting into. Because HIV and AIDS, it's not the only disease out there as a result to the ignorance or the explorative side of sex and sexual health. And we're seeing so many kids and youth adolescents exploring sexually. And not to take anything away from that, but they're doing so without education and without understanding the risk factors involved.
Patty, do you think there's something of a demographic gap in terms of just, you know, history and what folks remember? Because, you know, when you're talking about folks who are teenagers today or maybe in their early 20s, they don't really have any knowledge of what it was like in the 80s or the early 90s.
And they don't, because they've always grown up in a world where there's HIV. It's like having diabetes and heart issues. It's not like the early 80s and 90s where it was constantly in the news and you always heard about somebody passing away, especially if it was in the theaters, and you just don't hear it about it anymore. It's really become a quiet disease, and so kids today just look at it and go, oh, it's like having diabetes, you know, all I have to do is take a pill and I'll be fine.
When kids do have that kind of attitude, what are they not considering?
I think it's like any kid at that age, they're not looking at the long term.
And, well, the cost of medications, too.
It's not the cost.
Yeah.
You know, you're not, if you're 18, 19, and 20, you're not thinking about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was 18 and 19 and 20 at one point, and you're not thinking long term. You're thinking of the here and now.
All right. Well, you know, just in terms of that ability to even have that attitude of, oh, well, I can take a pill a day and I'll be fine. Tell us about today's treatments for HIV compared to, you know, where we were a decade ago or 20 years ago.
Oh, my gosh, where we were, 30 years ago, we didn't really have anything.
Right.
And what we had was great. I mean, thank God, you know, when they created AZT, it was great. But they really didn't know how to work it. And then once newer meds came out, things started to get better. But now we have so many different medications that are available that are wonderful, and they don't have the same side effects that they did even from the ones 15 years ago.
Right.
There's so much more out there, and there's so much more available.
And to compliment Patty, as she stated, there are many, many classes of medications available today that do not have those strong side effects as what we were accustomed to in the early 80s. The fatigue and all of those things. But even with the new medications that are out, what Patty does at AHF and what we do at McGregor is to, first of all, educate them about HIV and AIDS. Should the person test positive, get them linked to care, find out what plan of action is necessary as it relates to their medications, and to ensure that they're able to remain committed to the medical process. Just as if a person is diagnosed with diabetes, but they're not taking their insulin, thus it progresses. And that's what that's a challenge when you have a new diagnosis of someone with HIV, is to ensure that they have the proper tools, the educational components, the resources financially to help cover those medicines, and then the support groups and the support foundation of the medical staff to ensure that they remain committed to their obligation of taking those medications.
All right. Let's take a call from Bob in Port Charlotte. Bob, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Did you have a question or a comment for our guests?
Is there a certain ethnicities? Do the blacks seem to spread around the HIV and AIDS more? Is there fact to that?
Well, we can look at the, I guess, demographic breakdowns of, you know, what groups do seem to be more at risk. Do you find that to be the case, Patty, that there are certain groups, either, you know, age or ethnic demographics, where HIV just seems to be more prevalent for some reason or another?
I definitely think it affects some groups more than others, and it could be just because of where the demographics are.
And Bob, to
at poverty level and
right.
Lack of education. A lot of it is lack of education and stigma and fear.
Right. And just to compliment Patty, Bob, there was a time when the focus was primarily in the Fort Myers area, particularly the Dunbar community, which is basically comprised of a majority of African Americans. And as Patty stated, most times the reasons of the influx of infections in those areas are, one, there is a lack of education, The funds are not available. And for some, they just don't even know how to seek services if they even think they may be positive.
Are there, you know, perhaps cultural stigmas that are stronger, do you think, in some communities than others that are act as a barrier?
In my opinion, there are definitely cultural stigmas across the board. For African-Americans, I can say that personally because I am an African-American. It's a very difficult conversation to have, even as it relates to speaking to an African-American business owner about going in and presenting about HIV and AIDS, because for some reason we have a very difficult and sensitive side about speaking on that. So across the board, racially, there are some stigmas that are still out there.
Bob, thanks for the call. And you know, also just when it comes to looking at what groups are at risk, are we still primarily looking at, you know, homosexual men? Is that still, you know, where we're seeing the highest growth in new HIV infections? Or are there other groups that are really at high risk that we should be targeting as well when it comes to public education and outreach?
I would like to just interject a small part there.
Absolutely.
While the LGBT population, especially MSMs, men sleeping with men, would be a large number of those that are newly infected. And we are seeing our senior citizens become increasingly infected with HIV. And a vast majority of these seniors they have not been tested. They come from a generation where they feel if they walked into an emergency room for a particular visit, that they were tested somehow, some way. Mm-hmm. And so because no one told them about it, they feel like, oh, well, all is well, and I can continue with my sexual activities as I have been doing. And all along, by them being older, their immune systems are more subject to passing or picking up something such as HIV. They're a hard demographic to sit down and talk to as it relates to educating them about their sexual health.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. You brought up an interesting point there with the idea of, you know, folks thinking that at some point they have been tested, but it's not routine in an ER. It's not necessarily something that's going to routinely happen if you go to your annual doctor visit. Is that something that you, David, and you, Patty, would like to see just happen on a more routine basis within our medical establishment?
Well, technically, it can be routine now. That was actually written recently into the when we actually had the ACA plans. So it's actually routine. It should have been routine as of 2013, but a lot of people don't think about it, and especially our older population, and especially women. You know, once you've hit a certain age, you think, you know, I can't get pregnant anymore. Why do I have to worry about it? Mm-hmm. And you know, and of course, you know, maybe some of the younger people might talk to their grandmother about it, but who really wants to go, hey, Grandma, have you thought about this?
Right.
It's kind of like an odd conversation to have, you know, and I have an elderly parent. So of all my sisters, I'm probably the bold one who will go, hey, Mom, have you thought about? And all my sisters are going, oh, my gosh, did she just say that to Mom?
Right.
And it's because of what I do. But that's not a conversation you normally would have with your grandparent or your parent, and it's a difficult one to have, but it's something that our doctors start to we need our doctors to start having conversations like that, but they don't even think about it. I mean, if you go for your yearly checkup, it's not, unless you're in that risk group, they're not even looking at it, going, hey, you know what, this test can be free now, why don't you take it?
Right.
Well, let's talk about the test itself, you know, just in case that was, you know, keeping anybody away from finding out their own status. What's involved in the test, and how quickly can you get results back?
Oh, it's so easy. We do it here. It's 1, 2, 3, finger prick, and you get your results, and it's not more than 15 minutes between the time you answer your questions and the time you take the test.
Right, and
it's called the Clearview Rapid HIV Test. It's 15 minutes. It's easy.
And that is the same testing measure that we use at McGregor Clinic. It is the Clearview test. I guess the process, the best way to describe it would be a person who's pricking their finger for diabetes, and we take that blood sample. And then I'm tested, and the results are available within 15 minutes, and we're able to give them whatever the result is. And in the event it is positive, as far as McGregor Clinic, we're able to link them into care to ensure that they have the resources to manage their health with this new diagnosis.
All right. And David, tell us a bit more about your public outreach efforts. You talked about some of the groups you've established, you know, some partnerships with, and then also some traditionally gay establishments like, you know, Rascals or The Office Pub. I mean, you're really just meeting folks where they are.
Yes. Our prevention team at McGregor, prevention and outreach team at McGregor Clinic has really been impacted over the last year or so. We've gained relationships with our collegiate institutions such as FGCU, FSW, Cape Coral Tech, Heritage, going into those universities and those places of higher education, offering HIV 101, which is basically a one-hour condensed educational format about HIV. And with those opportunities to have the educational moments, we also provide and offer the free rapid testing for those persons that feel they would be able to go out and be tested immediately after the class. As it relates to education, we're also linked with our faith community, which we had some barriers there, but we're seeing more faith-based organizations open up to have the conversations about HIV and AIDS, and some even allowing us to provide the free rapid testing. Our community involvement has definitely expanded. We recently hosted an event at Rascals in Fort Myers where we partnered through a collaborative effort with CAN of Sarasota. They drove down and helped us with that testing initiative, and we tested over 30 individuals there, which was phenomenal for a two-hour event. We were very pleased with those results, and we'll actually be working with Tubby's of Cape Coral as well as The Office Pub in the near future.
All right. So really, really are getting out there. Are there any recommendations that either your organizations make or, you know, official recommendations regarding how often someone should get tested? Maybe based on their demographic profile or their activity, anything like that?
I would say the main thing is know your status. Get tested. You know, do that initial step.
Right. I definitely agree with Patty there. It is important to know your status. HIV, thankfully today, is something that is very manageable, but we cannot manage it if the individual does not know their personal status.
Right. And do you frequently come across cases where someone, for whatever reason, has avoided getting tested, and they only really start coming in seeking treatment because, you know, they've gotten really sick and they don't know why?
Yes, we've had that happen here.
Is this something that happens frequently?
No, actually, it's not as frequent as it used to be years ago. It's really not happened here as much as it used to.
Well, that's some good news there.
And I believe, and Patty will probably agree, that we're seeing a decrease in the patient walking in because they're feeling sick due to an increase in the presence of organizations such as ICANN, AHF, McGregor Clinic, CAN of Sarasota, and other agencies that are offering educational and outreach opportunities regarding HIV education.
All right. And in the few minutes we have left here, I really wanted to touch on, you know, stigmas that still exist, because those, of course, serve as a barrier to folks even wanting to go and find out their status. One thing I've read over and over on, you know, different articles I found online was that generally women are more isolated or feel more isolated and stigmatized than men do. And I'm wondering if you find that to be true or why that might be.
In my opinion, some women basically are talkers, they're communicators. Mm-hmm. However, women are not so privy or so willing to congregate and speak about their health, especially as it relates to having a conversation about HIV or AIDS. And some men still struggle with that as well because of the stigmas that are associated. No one really wants to even possibly ask, well, have you been tested? Because now the other three people on the opposite side of the table may be assuming, oh, he or she must be positive.
Right.
And so they don't want that stigma attached. But on the other side, you do have individuals who are positive and they're changing the face of what HIV looks like. They're being, they're giving a voice to it and showing that it's a manageable disease. Get out there, get tested, and educate those around you. It starts at home. When an individual tests positive, that person can be more effective than the McGregor Clinic, the AHF ICANN, because they have a personal experience and they can be the voice to help change the way America and society embraces and understands HIV.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this portion of the program. But thank you so much, Patty and David, for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
David Jackson is an outreach and prevention specialist with the McGregor Clinic here in Fort Myers. Find more information online at mcgregorclinic.org. And Patty Kelly is an assistant supervisor of case management with AHF ICANN, also here in Fort Myers. They're online at icanswfl.org. Additionally, the Florida Health Department in Lee County will be hosting a town hall meeting on HIV education and prevention at the Dr. Carrie Robinson Community Center in Fort Myers. That's from 4 to 6 in the evening on Wednesday, August 5th. We'll have a link to more information about that event on our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. We're taking a short break, but when we return, should Florida raise its minimum wage from the current $8.05 an hour to $15 an hour? Similar proposals have been gaining traction around the country. We'll weigh the pros and cons as we explore the potential economic impacts of raising the minimum wage. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.